Morning.
We have three cases scheduled for oral argument this morning, and we understand counsel in all three have appeared and announced ready. So we'll call the first case, Elizabeth Santana, individually and as personal representative of the estate of Rogelio Santana versus Arpin America Moving Systems et al. Mr. Hall.
Your Honor, may it please the court, Mr. Hall and Mr. Fazio. Your Honor, for the court to be aware, this is my father and my partner, Lance Hall, who's seated here with me. Morning. We are here today, Your Honors, on a case that involves a interstate motor carrier trip in which my client is Elizabeth Santana, the wife of a man named Rogelio Santana. Rogelio Santana was a man assigned to drive on this interstate trip to Mississippi and back to the DFW area. Mr. Santana was in the, two other gentlemen were in the vehicle when Mr. Santana was traveling back from Mississippi, and they had a wreck near Mesquite, Texas, in which all three gentlemen in the vehicle died. Mrs. Santana has advanced wrongful death claims and survival claims against the alleged motor carrier employer and the motor carrier's agent. The motor carrier is a company called Paul Arpin Van Lines, now I guess Arpin Van Lines, but they're referred to as PAVL, Pavel, in the brief. The agent of the motor carrier is a company called Arpin America Moving Systems, which is AAMS in the brief. The questions that are before the court result from a summary judgment that was advanced by both of the defendants in the underlying court, which was granted on many allegations that were brought forth, mostly with regard to negligence and gross negligence against these two companies. The AAMS, the agent of the motor carrier that assigned Mr. Santana to drive on this trip, was a non-subscriber for purposes of Texas Workman's Comp. The motor carrier, Paul Arpin Van Lines, was a subscriber to Comp. A Comp claim has been made against Paul Arpin Van Lines, which is pending. The plaintiffs have alleged that because the agent that assigned this man to drive on this trip was not a subscriber to Comp, that they have elected to abandon their common law defenses in this case, many of which are still being argued to this court. That being said, we have addressed many of those arguments with respect to respondeat superior and things like that in the brief. The questions we believe that are before this court relate to whether or not Mr. Santana was a statutory employee of these companies for purposes of their duties to comply with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. Those regulations obviously are more stringent. They impose strict liabilities on motor carriers and their agents. Well, motor carrier is defined to include a motor carrier's agents and employees. That is addressed in this brief, and that is an important consideration for the court because the duties that are imposed upon motor carriers and their agents are elevated to the common law duties that would normally be involved in a case like this.
Doesn't it really come down to whether or not Mr. Santana was in the course and scope of his employment?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because in this particular case, the questions related to course and scope and respondeat superior are not applicable in the context of statutory employment. If a person is a statutory employee, the state common law questions that we would normally address with regard to course and scope are not, the employment relationship is imputed. They have non-delegable duties.
But I think there's case law out there that if the statutory employee has deviated from the purpose of the trip, that he's no longer a statutory employee for purposes of
Judge,
negligence.
I believe that is the case, and there are cases, and I have cited those cases, and what I believe those cases say is that even if a person has gone on a trip for personal business, or even if a person has undertaken to do something like carry a hitchhiker somewhere, that still makes the federal motor carrier safety regulations still apply in that particular context. This is not something that if you deviate for personal use of the vehicle or a personal deviation from the trip or something happens that is outside of the scope of your purpose for this particular employer, you are still bound by the federal motor carrier safety regulations and they still apply. And that is addressed in the brief, Your Honor. And in that regard, it's kind of a lengthy brief, but I'll try to point the court to the area of the brief if you would like me to, Your Honor.
That's fine. You've answered my question.
Okay. There is a voluminous case law that talks about deviation. There's also case law that talks about whether the carrier even knows that this is happening. If the guidelines for the CFRs under the statutory employee doctrine even address that. Is it required that the carrier know this person is doing something? And the answer is no. The reason that these guidelines are put in place in the legislative history is addressed a little bit, but a great burden has been placed upon motor carriers because we know that they are going to be people that, when these guidelines are not complied with, have the ability to be responsible financially and to the public and for safety of people, including their employees, whom they deviate from these strict requirements, to train them, to ensure compliance with these regulations, to make sure that the people traveling in the vehicle have been registered and qualified by the carrier. Mr. Santana was in a position where he had never driven an interstate trip before. These people had used him as a local driver. They came down to a point where they had nobody to assign to this trip, so they sent him to Mississippi. It's undisputed. This was his first interstate trip for these folks.
But the hurdle that you have is that he wasn't the driver when the accident happened.
Well, it's their burden to prove that, Your Honor, with regard to summary judgment.
Is there really an issue of fact on that particular fact?
I believe that there is, and I don't believe that the people that they are relying upon to say that he was driving the vehicle have admitted that they are not qualified to voice an expert opinion as to who was operating the vehicle within the confines of the cab. These EMT people have admitted in their depositions they're not qualified as experts in that regard.
Yes. Does that require expert testimony? Who's driving?
Well, in my opinion, a reconstruction of the accident with regard to human factors and things like that would generally require an expert. But the peace officer that responded to the accident himself never looked inside the cab of the vehicle. He did not see the men being removed from the vehicle. The basis of he initially said, in fact, that Mr. Santana was driving the vehicle. It was the defense lawyers met with him, called his attention to the color of some straps that were strapping these people down in the obituary photos, in the EMT photos, and he changed his opinion based upon that. But as far as there being a substantive question, I believe that there is as to who was driving. And that particular question is addressed in the brief as well and some of the facts related to that. And again, the man who they are relying upon to say that he was driving, he never saw anyone inside of that cab. He never looked inside the cab. He admitted that he didn't see them being pulled from the cab. He did no investigation into where they were inside the cab at the time of this accident. He was removed from the scene while the EMT people were responding and doing whatever they were doing. And he also stated, I believe, that essentially these people had been thrown about all inside the cab. One man was through the floorboard.
Was there any conflicting summary judgment evidence as to who was driving? Any contrary evidence to what you just described?
The dispatcher for the company said that he believed that Mr. Santana had been driving on the day in question. There is also the log report, which is required to be kept, which said that Mr. Santana was driving the vehicle. It listed his hours of service as a driver. And The peace officer himself initially said that Mr. Santana was driving. He had varied in his opinion, I guess.
Well, if there's not a genuine issue of material fact as to who was driving, do you agree to our previous conversation about the hurdles that you have to overcome if Mr. Santana was not driving? In other words, are you premising your position on the genuine issue of material fact concerning who was driving?
I believe that even if Mr. Santana was not driving, we still have a very valid case with regard to the carrier and their agent's failure to train. The CFRs specifically say that the carrier is responsible for the training, qualification, and insurance that the employees comply with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. They wholly failed to do that in this case. This case involves one where this man had absolutely no training in complying with the hours of service or anything else. No training in who was qualified to operate a vehicle. In fact, they represented to him that he was qualified, and he was not, because the carrier and their agent had failed to conduct a background check on his qualifications and experience as a driver. Because they, in failing to conduct that qualification test into his experience, they failed to comply with the CFRs, which are specifically intended not to have a guy go out on the road that doesn't know anything about.
Okay, I agree with your interpretation of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act, but all that does is make someone an employee. You still have to have causation. And if Mr. Santana was not driving, how do you get the causation? Say they breached every duty imposed upon them under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act and they didn't train him at all. Still, if he wasn't driving, where's the causation element?
I believe that a person that has been assigned to drive on a trip is required to comply with the hours of service. If Mr. Santana was not driving, the person that was driving was also this company's statutory employee. The freight handler, Mr. Santana, it's undisputed, Mr. Santana was told to go out and get people to help him load the vehicle by this agent for the motor carrier. They knew he was going to do that. That's cited in the record. I've pointed the court to the record in my brief. They knew he was going to go get people to be freight handlers. Freight handlers are defined as statutory employees under the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act. The term, as defined in the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act, the motor carrier is defined to include its agents and officers, representatives, and employees. An employer in the definition of the statutory employee definition that we refer to includes freight handlers. Mr. Santana was forced. He was put in a position where he was either going to violate the hours of service if this other man was driving. Mr. Santana was either going to violate the hours of service requirement or he was going to have somebody else drive. In either situation, he is placed in a position not to comply with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Requirements. He was forced to take an illegal action either way, but he had no knowledge, no idea what these rules required. No one had ever given him any instruction on who was and was not permitted to, for instance, back the vehicle up or open the doors or what the hours of service requirements were. He was given a false identification number to use on his logbooks on this trip. He was put in a position where it was impossible for him to know of or comply with these requirements. And so if someone else undertook to operate the vehicle, he was put in a position where he didn't have any training telling him not to do anything like that, and he was put in a position where if he didn't do that, he would be in violation of the hours of service requirement, which he had no training in. And so, in my opinion, even if this man was driving, the negligence of the motor carrier and its agent in not training and not ensuring that he was knowledgeable in the CFRs and not in the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Requirements, and not giving him any ability to operate this vehicle on this trip safely, resulted in not just his death, but all these men's death. They were desperate to have a driver. They put this man out on the road without any training, without any background, without verification of his qualifications as required by law, and that resulted in him being put in a situation where he was going to break the law one way or the other. Either the hour of service requirements were going to be broken, which obviously the peace officer said that he believed the sole cause of this accident was fatigue. Hours of service requirement were going to be broken, or he was going to have somebody driving that was unqualified, which he was as well. That's undisputed. The motor carrier's Pavel, the motor carrier's representative, said he was not qualified. He was a man that we had objected to as not having the background qualifications we require under federal law. So my red light came on, Judge, so I'm going to, Your Honors, so I'm going to step back, and I'm glad that I think I have a little rebuttal time. So if there are any questions, and I'll try to find these points in my brief. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Mr. Fazio, I got that right. Okay.
I've been told, Judge, to keep my own time, so I'll try to be looking at the watch while I'm doing it. We're splitting the time with Mr. Randy Hall. May it please the court. I think Justice Walker hits the point perfect. The issue that permeates this case is Mr. Santana elected to and allowed and gave over an 18-wheeler truck to a non-qualified person that neither Arpan America or Paul Arpan knew was even in existence at the time of this unfortunate fatality. That's the issue that permeates this whole case. And I think that's the issue that resulted in an appropriate ruling at the trial court level, that this case should be granted a summary judgment, because it was Mr. Santana's own gross negligence, I add, in allowing not only to himself but to the members of the public, in allowing a non-qualified person to operate an 18-wheeler. And it resulted, unfortunately, in the death of not only Mr. Santana, but two other, I think, innocent people. The Federal Motor Rule Act, and I want to touch briefly on that because I want to mainly deal with the non-subscriber issues in my limited time before the court. Again, Justice Walker, the statute requires the framework that the person be in the course and scope of employment for that reg to act. For that regulation to apply. It also goes on, and in the regulation, 49 CFR 390.5 requires that Mr. Santana had to be operating a motor vehicle for that statute to act. Now, I think page 14 of my brief, at least, abundantly makes it clear that all of the EMS drivers, the EMT people, the first responders that put their hands on the driver of this vehicle, all, without a doubt, identified Mr. Ramirez as the driver. There's no question about that. So to that extent, I think that there's no fact issue as to the identity of the driver of the vehicle. And that's found on page 14 of at least the ARPAN brief. So to that extent, we have Mr. Ramirez, an unknown person, apparently a non-qualified person, operating this 18-wheeler. So if I can, for the court's for my time, I'd like to discuss the non-subscriber claims. There is no legal duty for non-subscriber, even assuming Mr. Santana was our employee, which we are obviously objecting to. He was a W-9. We didn't pay him taxes. He never filled out a job application. He was a pure contract employee, whom, by the way, which I think is a very important fact that keeps not getting reiterated by the appellants, is that he was a commercial driver's license holder. He had and gone through truck driving school and obtained a CDL. Page 8 of our brief, of ARPAN's brief, Ron Cox's undisputed testimony from ARPAN America clearly indicates Mr. Santana's qualifications and the fact that he drove 18-wheelers for ARPAN America. Now, granted, they were local deliveries inside the state of Texas, but he still operated a CDL. And to the extent that the legal duty to a non-subscriber employer, even assuming that there is an employment-employer relationship, the Allen versus AT&T transportation case that's cited in our brief says that a non-subscriber employer, in almost the exact situation, doesn't have to tell a person owns a CDL how the appropriate rules of the road. In the Allen case, this guy overturned his truck. and alleged, well, you didn't tell me about that I had to follow appropriate speed limits. Well, the court in Allen said, that's ridiculous. You are a CDL person. It's common that you understand the rules of the road. And I think it's extremely common knowledge and it's common danger. If a qualified commercial driver's license operator turns over his truck to someone who has apparently no qualifications to drive an 18-wheeler, that those dangers, that act is dangerous and is commonly known to everyone. The Texas Supreme Court in the Skiles versus Jack in the Box case, which was my case, also said that that relieves any legal obligation upon the non-subscriber to train or to warn against that type of event from happening. And so to that extent, Your Honors, my argument is, even if for some reason that this court determined or the trial court determined there was an employee-employer relationship with ARP and America and Mr. Santana, which we obviously dispute, there's no legal duty on the part of ARP and America to tell Mr. Santana, don't let someone who's not qualified to operate that truck. And I think that also goes to the negligent entrustment issues that they're trying to advance. We had no idea that this lumper was going to operate this truck. In fact, I dispute the fact that there's evidence that we forced Mr. Santana to hire anybody. There's no requirement that he could have hired someone here or in Mississippi to help him unload the truck. He could have hired him there. There was no requirement that he be transporting these people like he was. He had the obligation and the right to hire whomever he wanted to hire. That was, again, that's part of the process, that he is an independent contractor, not an employee of ours. No one knew Mr. Ramirez's existence. So to that extent, I think it's inappropriate for them to try to hold Mr. Ramirez as an agent of ARP and Americas when we had no idea who he was. And again, the freight hauler example, the statute goes on, if you read the statute, that he's got to be injured in the process or in the act in which that freight hauler is engaged in. If Mr. Ramirez would have dropped the couch on Mr. Santana and hurt him in that manner, then maybe that statute applies. But that statute doesn't envision a freight hauler driving an 18-wheeler as what we have in this instance. So to that extent, I think we've established no legal duty. The second issue I think that gets us a summary judgment is the proximate cause issue. And the Doe versus the Boys Club of America case is, I think, a perfect case. That even in that case, the child molester was employed, and he had some DWIs, and the court said it may have been negligent for that company to hire this person, especially being around a bunch of young boys. But they held that his intentional act of molestation relieved the Boys Club of any legal liability. They had no idea that because of his act, that he was going to, his past, he was going to engage in that type of activity. Well, same here, Your Honors. We had no idea Mr. Santana, a commercial driver's license holder, was going to entrust an 18-wheeler that endangered himself and the members of the general public to a non-qualified lumper. Mr. Cox also, in the brief, I point out the testimony on page 8, that Mr. Santana wasn't required to come back that next day. He had no trips, and this was not a forced trip assignment. He was given the assignment, might have been inappropriate. We thought he was qualified to go interstate. He currently had the qualifications to drive an 18-wheeler. He just wasn't qualified per Paul Arpin Van Line's qualifications. But there was no requirement, per Ron Cox's undisputed testimony, that he was to come back at any time. So this issue of violating hours, I think, is a ruse and not supported by any evidence. That's pretty much on my time. I want to leave, again, the rest of the time for Mr. Randy Hall to address the other issues. Unless the court has any questions, I'll be seated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spazio. Mr. Hall?
May it please this honorable court, Mr. Hall and Hall. First, let's get on the rails with regard to my client. I had the motor carrier, Paul Arpin Van Lines. The only cause of action against Paul Arpin Van Lines in this suit was gross negligence at the time of the summary judgment. All this talk about statutory employment, whether or not the federal motor vehicle regulations apply, have nothing to do with me. The only cause of action at the time in the current pleadings was gross negligence. And so the summary judgment as to my client, the carrier, was there any evidence whatsoever of gross negligence on the part of Paul Arpin Van Lines? And in all three respects, from I don't think any element of gross negligence, there was any evidence of it, and I think that was what guided the court in granting the summary judgment as to my client. In our brief, we do go ahead and respond to the statutory employee in the alternative because it was all jumbled together in their brief, and we felt compelled to do it. So my argument is going to, unless you have questions or want me to direct it otherwise, is going to go to whatever evidence of gross negligence there was before the court, which there was none. It is undisputed. First off, let's make sure it's undisputed from the physical evidence that Mr. Ramirez was driving the truck. And you all have all the affidavits of the EMT people. There was no question about that. But it was undisputed that Paul Arpin Van Lines rejected Mr. Santana as a driver to drive under its authority. What happened is the Arpin America, the local agent, has to submit a driver for approval before that driver is allowed to go interstate under Paul Arpin Van Lines authority. They did that. They submitted Mr. Santana. And Paul Arpin Van Line said, no, we have some questions about him. We need more information. We are not approving him to drive under our authority. This is undisputed. For some reason, and I'm not quite sure what, I don't think it's really material, he was put behind the wheel to drive an interstate trip, unbeknownst to my client. My client had absolutely no knowledge of Mr. Santana being assigned a trip. This is undisputed. It's also undisputed that part of the way this works between the carrier and the local agent is that the trip has to be registered. We have to know about the trip. It has to be registered. We have to know about the driver, make sure that it's an approved driver. Well, for, again, reasons that I don't think are particularly material, the trip was not registered. So my client knew nothing about the trip, nothing about Mr. Santana driving, and certainly didn't know that Mr. Santana was going to put one of his helpers behind the wheel to finish driving in to the dispatcher. No knowledge whatsoever.
You filed a no evidence motion?
I did. I filed both a no evidence motion for summary judgment and a traditional one, Your Honor, both of those.
No evidence submitted in response of any knowledge of the facts?
Absolutely none. Absolutely none.
Isn't that the end of it? I mean,
yes, sir. I believe it is the end of it. And I don't want to, I know you all have read my brief, and if you, to me, I think that's the end of it. I would like to very quickly address, unless you all direct me otherwise, there's three reasons why the statutory employment thing doesn't apply, even if it was relevant to me. You hit the nail on the head. He wasn't operating a commercial vehicle. He didn't fall within the definition of statutory employee in the regs. That's number one. Number two, those regs are designed to protect members of the public. They're not designed to protect crew members. They don't have application here. It wasn't a member of the public that was injured. It was the individual that was assigned by the local agent to drive. And we cite all kinds of case law on that, including the United States Supreme Court decision that makes that abundantly clear. Finally, the third reason the statutory employment doesn't work for any reason in this case is what's known as the household goods exception. When you are hauling household goods, which was what was happening here, and you have the appropriate vehicle lease, which we had here, unless that trip is for the benefit of the motor carrier, okay, the statutory employment does not apply, and we cite you the regs on that. We knew nothing about the trip. We received no compensation for the trip, didn't approve the trip, didn't authorize the trip, didn't ratify the trip. Okay, so it wasn't for our benefit. So for those three reasons, the statutory employment does not apply. But Justice Casey, you're absolutely right. It ends there on the gross negligence part. And I appreciate very much the opportunity to be heard. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Mr. Hall. How many Mr. Halls in the room today?
We've got plenty of them in here. We claimed in the past to be cousins, but we hadn't proven it yet. With regard to the arguments that have been brought forth. I would like to point out to the court and reemphasize this, all of these arguments are premised on the idea that these folks attempted to delegate non-delegable duties to their agents and their employee, Mr. Santana. They assigned this man to drive on this trip. They have admitted that their what they attempted to do was assign all of the responsibility for compliance and training and of the federal regulations to Mr. Santana. Paul Arpin Van Lines, a national carrier, is coming in here arguing to the court, well, we gave all that responsibility to Arpin America Moving System, and they did it, so we're not responsible. These duties are non-delegable, Your Honors. These are not things that you can point the finger at each other. And even if they do, even if they're pointing the finger at each other saying, well, you didn't tell me or I told you, it's undisputed that Mr. Santana had no idea that these folks had said he's not qualified to drive on the trip. All he knew was, here's the keys to the vehicle, head for Nesbitt, Mississippi. It's undisputed he did not know if he was disqualified by the National Van Lines. For all he knew, he was qualified by them. But they failed to undertake this background investigation. They knew that they had not complied with the background investigation requirements of the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulations. Both of them knew that with regard to Mr. Santana. And yet they still allowed their agent to send him out on the open highway. Now, with regard to whether it was for their benefit, their agency agreement requires payment. It requires things to happen. It is for their benefit. This contractual agreement between this agent and this motor carrier was a beneficial arrangement that was constructed to provide financial remuneration over a long period of time on many trips to this national carrier. The agent was, in fact, required only to operate on interstate trips under the national carrier's authority. So I would reemphasize many of these arguments, if not all of them, are premised on the idea that the non-delegable duties were the responsibility of the employee or the responsibility of the agent. And that is not appropriate. That is not permitted by the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act. It requires that these non-delegable duties be, regardless of knowledge, regardless of compliance with the regulations, it's their responsibility. It's the motor carrier's responsibility and their agents. It was also an argument was advanced under Allen that because this man had a CDL, he is automatically a person that should have known these things. That's not true. The CFRs specifically say that it is the responsibility of the motor carrier, which is defined to include its agents, to ensure that they are instructed in these regulations. Mr. Santana was not. There's no evidence he had any knowledge of these regulations. He had never driven an interstate trip before. This is a man that was not trained, not given any guidance. And the Allen case involved a man that had many, many years of experience driving on interstate trips. It's very distinguishable from this case. This case, and they say in their brief, because of his great vast experience and things like that, there is no vast experience. This was his first trip on an interstate trip. He is not like the man in the Allen case where that man had 15 years of trucking experience and interstate shipments and had this vast base of experience in interstate motor carrier shipments. I would also like to, on page 12 of my brief, it identifies a lot of the assumptions that were made by this Officer Parker. He says many things, and one of the things he says is, he never looked inside the cab of the vehicle. He reformed his opinion based upon photographs that were shown to him by the defense lawyer. He initially believed that Mr. Santana was driving the vehicle. We are here because of summary judgment. This is not an argument after a verdict or a jury verdict or a trial court verdict. We are required to advance at least some evidence of our claims. We have done that. We have advanced evidence to support our claims. We have at least a scintilla of evidence that the National Van Line was subjectively and objectively aware of the dangers associated with sending a man out on the road, including death, sending a man out on the road that was not properly qualified in compliance with these regulations. And that is an agreement that was between these two companies. They were aware of these risks, and yet they ignored them and sent this man out on the road despite his lack of qualifications. So thank you, Your Honors. My time, I saw my red light come on, so I'll sit down.
Thank you. All counselors, we appreciate you coming here this morning to present your arguments, and they've been very helpful. Case is submitted, and you're excused, and have a safe trip back to Sweetwater.